Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Hoyer, end zone, Meredith for the touchdown. Welcome to the spotlight, Cameron Meredith. Well, he's a big target, as you said earlier. He's 6'3". He runs a great route.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We got a tremendous show lined up for you today, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be talking Raging Cajun football recruiting. We'll be talking LSU athletics saying, no more money for you, university. We'll also be talking about select schools creating their own organization here in the state of Louisiana. Coming up at 7:32, we'll be talking with the Dean Kane of Acadiana Sports Media. George Faust, sports director at KLFY, will join us to talk all things Raging Cajuns and get his thoughts on the high school division. We'll be diving deeper into the high school issue with Robin Fanbro from the Baton Rouge Advocate at 8:02. And then at 8:32, we'll be talking New Orleans Saints training camp news and notes with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. But that's where we're going to begin. The news that broke yesterday after we went off the air that the New Orleans Saints have parted ways with wide receiver Cameron Meredith after just one season. Remember, the Saints signed him as a restricted free agent, signed him away from the Chicago Bears. Cam Meredith was a guy that went undrafted, broke through with the Chicago Bears, showed a lot of promise, big, rangy wide receiver, fast, but he had severe amount of injuries. So much so that 2017 was essentially wiped away from the books due to an injury. The Saints took a flyer on him, signed him as a restricted free agent. He played sparingly in a handful of games last year, suffered another injury, never made the impact he was supposed to make on the football field. Sean Payton said it a few weeks ago that this would be an important training camp for Cam Meredith, that this would be a crucial training camp for Cam Meredith. And we talked about it on yesterday's show. Is there a spot on the roster for Cam Meredith? He made no impact last year in the passing game. He was injured. Not to mention, you had other guys step up when he was not effective, whether that was due to injury or just inconsistency. Traquan Smith, they invested a third-round draft pick on him last year. Keith Kirkwood, an undrafted rookie out of Temple, who made big play after big play for the Saints last year. Then in this offseason, they bring in Rashard Matthews before training camp, a veteran guy who's had his best year with the Tennessee Titans. Oh, and then they have other undrafted rookies who have already been shining throughout training camp through the first 3 days. You didn't hear much about Cam Meredith. He was supposed to be back healthy, supposed to be making an impact. But apparently, Mickey Loomis, general manager of the New Orleans Saints, head coach Sean Payton, made the decision to part ways with Cameron Meredith after just 1 year. Meredith posted a cryptic post on his personal Instagram account that said, "It's been fun." The team lured Meredith away from the Chicago Bears during free agency last offseason as a restricted free agent, as I said, but he only appeared in 6 games. was hardly a factor. Without Cam Meredith in the mix now, the wide receiving core looks a little bit, the picture looks a little bit clearer pertaining to the wide receiving core. Obviously, you got Michael Thomas. He's your number one. They're going to get that contract done here during training camp. He's going to be either the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League, or he's going to be a top three. You got Ted Ginn Jr., who's reliable, even though he's getting a little long in the tooth. But then you brought in Rishard Matthews. You have an undrafted rookie in Emmanuel Butler from Northern Arizona, who we talked about on yesterday's show. Now, both of those guys will be having a better chance to crack the roster. On top of it, so you got Michael Thomas, you got Tre'Quan Smith, you got Keith Kirkwood, you got Ted Ginn Jr., then you're going to have Rishard Matthews, and you got Emmanuel Butler. Those are six guys. Those are going to be your six guys. Grayson, the former LSU track and field star, is more than likely going to be relegated to special teams or some gadget plays. But if you head into the regular season with Michael Thomas, Tre'Quan Smith, Ted Ginn Jr., Keith Kirkwood, Rishard Matthews, and Emmanuel Butler, I'd feel really good about my wide receiving core, especially with adding Jared Cook, coming off a record-breaking season, personal record-breaking season for him, signing him in the offseason. Meredith, though, already saw the writing on the wall here, because remember, he took a pay cut back in March after his original two-year, $9.5 million deal. The cut will now save the Saints about $900,000 in cap space. So Cam Meredith is no longer a New Orleans Saints wide receiver. They didn't take long, though, to fill that roster spot during camp, though, because the Saints then turned around and signed veteran guard Patrick Omohe to take that roster spot. Give a little bit of background about him. Omohe has played for the Giants and the Jaguars. He has started 56 of 67 games in a five-year career, all at guard, but he's done it for four different teams. So he's a journeyman. He played for both the Jacksonville Jaguars and the New York Giants last season, starting 11 of 14 games and allowing five sacks, five quarterback hits, and 24 hurries. So, look, he's not great. He's not even going to be a starter for this team. The Saints already have Andres Pete and Larry Warford as their starting guards. We know that they brought in Easton from the Minnesota Vikings. He's a versatile guy that can play center or guard. So this is a move to add depth to the offensive line, because the offensive line was banged up down the stretch. The offensive numbers dipped for the Saints last season. After averaging like 34 points a game through the first 12 weeks, they dipped down to 23.5 for the final five games of the year, and then didn't break 24 points in the two playoff games. Part of that was because the offensive line was banged up. So they have other guys like Cameron Tom and Will Clapp that can also play guard or center. But we'll see if Patrick Omohe will last on the roster, if this was just a simple, hey, let's give this guy a flyer during training camp and see if he can provide us with some depth. If not, we can simply cut him. But Meredith did not make an impact as he was expected to. Look, anytime you go out and sign a restricted free agent, you have to give up something. You have to give up draft picks. You have to give up compensation. The Saints made Meredith an offer, if you remember. The Bears did not match. The Bears were okay letting Cam Meredith walk. Now we know why. And the Saints went out there and signed him to a two-year deal, $9.5 million offer sheet. And Meredith had only nine catches for 114 yards and one touchdown in six games last season. While he was still dealing with the complications from his surgically repaired knee that he had done with the Bears, he missed portions of the Saints' minicamp with the injury after agreeing to a pay cut in March. in 2016. That was the breakout year for Meredith with the Chicago Bears. That's why the Saints thought that he could be a cheap option at wide receiver to help give them depth last year during the offseason. Now, they signed Cam Meredith, and they drafted Traquan Smith, and they signed undrafted rookie Keith Kirkwood. So they knew they needed to build up some reliable pass catchers on the other side of the field opposite of Michael Thomas. And you can see why Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton liked Cam Meredith, because he had that great year in 2016. 66 catches, 888 yards. He averaged more than 13 yards per catch, and he had 4 touchdowns. But the kid couldn't stay healthy. He's only 26 years old. He will likely line up with someone that is in desperate need of a wide receiver. There's already reports coming out, rumors coming out, that the New York Giants are interested in Cam Meredith, because obviously they have one wide receiver that's suspended for the first 4 games of the season, another one that tore up his knee, will miss the whole season, and Corey Coleman. Golden Tate's the one that will miss the first 4 games of the season. And they have another one, Sterling Shepard, who has broken his thumb. Oh, and they lost Odell Beckham Jr. to the Cleveland Browns. They traded him away. So they need some wide receiver depth. Cam Meredith will land on his feet somewhere. Someone will give him an opportunity, but it won't be with the Saints. The Cam Meredith era with the New Orleans Saints floundered. It's over. Wasn't much to talk about. Wasn't much to write home about. They took a chance on the guy who was coming off a severe injury where he's having knee surgery. It didn't work out. Meredith was never the same. He could never stay on the field. Part of that was because, once again, he was banged up. He was still recovering from that injury. The other part of it was the other guys on that roster, in particular the other younger guys, like Kirkwood, like Traquan Smith, even though they were up and down as rookies, they outplayed Cam Meredith. And then the Saints, you could see the writing on the wall. We talked about it on the show. You could see the writing on the wall because of what the Saints were doing. The fact that they brought in another veteran wide receiver and Rishard Matthews to camp. And then they signed another undrafted rookie free agent wide receiver. If you think Cam Meredith's going to be your guy, you're not going to bring in 2 other guys to compete with him. That told you everything that you needed to know on how they felt about Cam Meredith. So Meredith, who went on the IR back in November of last season, will not be playing a down again, at least not this season, and more than likely in the rest of his career in the NFL as a member of the New Orleans Saints. We'll see if he lands somewhere else. But the Saints making moves during training camp. Cut wide receiver Cam Meredith. Signed veteran offensive guard Patrick Omome to help bolster up that offensive line. But that wasn't the only news coming out of Saints training camp down in Metairie yesterday. We'll dive more into that when we come back right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you want to share your thoughts about Cam Meredith being released by the New Orleans Saints yesterday. The number to call is 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. You are listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Look, the Cam Meredith news is what dominated the headlines out of training camp yesterday, as expected, and the fact that they brought in another guard. But there's some other stuff, other items of note that came out of day 4 of training camp for the New Orleans Saints yesterday. And the big one is that there has become a 3-way competition at the center position. Remember, Max Unger, a former Super Bowl champion with the Seattle Seahawks, he was part of that Jimmy Graham trade. Then he came over and helped solidify the Saints' offensive line. He helped make everyone better, brought a bit of toughness to the offensive line. And he retired. Now, looking back, you could tell that he wasn't the same down the stretch. He looked a little off during the stretch run of the regular season as well as during the playoffs. He wasn't his dominant, kind of gnarly self, because he was known as one of the more physical, dominant centers in the league. Well, he makes his announcement that his retirement, and the Saints decide to use their first pick in the draft on Eric McCoy, center out of Texas A&M. A lot of people believe that he is a plug-and-play guy. If not, he'll be in the starting lineup sooner than later. They also went out in free agency and got themselves Nick Easton, a guy who's played both guard and center for the Minnesota Vikings, but he was injured last year. And they already have Cameron Tom, who has ties to the state of Louisiana. The Advocate's reporting that all three are locked in a three-way competition for the right to start at the center position, to be the man distributing the ball to Drew Brees, number nine. McCoy said, "It's Drew Brees back there. You'd give your life for the guy. That's how much you care about protecting him." So it's good that the rookie already knows what his priority is and how important it is. So they're going through 4 days in practice, two in pads, and each player of the three has had their turn working with the first team offense during the 11-on-11 drills. Tom has led the way with 2 days of work with the starters, while Easton and McCoy have totaled 1 day each. Will Clapp, former LSU star and last year's seventh-round pick, has worked with the third-team offense. So he's really not in the mix here. Sean Payton says four practices, though, is not enough time to properly evaluate McCoy, much less declare a winner. Quote, "Just the overall consistency. We have two new players. The under-center snaps from McCoy may be a little bit more frequent than he's used to. It's early, though. It's just the second day in the pads. I thought we got good work in today. We hit a stretch in the middle of practice where it kind of lagged, and I thought we picked it back up a little bit better." End quote. McCoy is probably the most talented of the three players out there. Whether or not he picks up the offense in the plays is going to be whether or not the young man from Texas A&M is going to be the starter at the beginning of the season. McCoy was critical of his own self, saying yesterday, quote, "I would have said I'd done a solid job. Like I've said, there's still lots of room for improvement," end quote. So center, there is a three-way battle there. I still think it's McCoy's job. Easton could start the season, though. Look, the Saints signed him on a four-year, $24 million deal during free agency. Okay? He's a fifth-year pro. He's played both guard and center. Now, you could have him start, maybe bring McCoy along a little bit, and then have Easton go back to being a backup for Warford or Andres Pete. I also think the move that the Saints made with Easton in the offseason was done in knowing that they would probably let Andres Pete walk because he'll become an unrestricted free agent after this season. So you're just adding your depth. You draft a guy in the second round at center. You sign a guy who's played both center and guard. Lock him up to a four-year deal. You're kind of ensuring that your interior offensive line is set for the next few seasons. Regardless, I think it's going to be Easton, McCoy. If it's not McCoy to start the season, don't be surprised if you see McCoy take over midway through, and then they use Easton to maybe back up Andres Pete and Walford, who both have dealt with being nicked up in the past. So you got that three-way battle going on currently at the beginning of training camp here for the New Orleans Saints. And that's kind of warming up. But reports coming out yesterday that the intensity was increased at training camp yesterday for the New Orleans Saints down there in Metairie. Rod Walker of The Advocate referred to the second day of the team working in pads as an intense day. Saints defensive end Trey Hendrickson and rookie tight end Elise Mack threw punches at one another before being separated by their teammates. Second-year defensive end Marcus Davenport was the main one helping restore order during the little bit of a scuffle. Rod Walker's reporting another play that showed just how physical things got during day four of training camp. It was when defensive back Kayvon Webster delivered a hard hit on Simi Cobbs. Those were among the many highlights on the day where some of the usual suspects shined. There was a larger normal amount of players missing. Of course, Michael Thomas, who is holding out due to contract negotiations, was not there once again. Safety Marcus Williams. Rod Walker's reporting it's unclear why Williams was absent from yesterday's practice. We'll probably find out more about that today. Like I said, Thomas has missed his fourth consecutive day for his contract negotiations. And a few other big names were missing from Monday's practice. Running backs Latavius Murray and Buck Allen and defensive back Christian Campbell. Rookie Saquon Hampton, who the Saints drafted in the sixth round out of Rutgers, filled in for Williams and had a pass breakup in one of the drills that caught the attention of many media members. Justin Hardy, who was re-signed in the offseason, he's a special team star for the Saints, has been showing what he can do in the secondary as well. He broke up a couple of passes in some one-on-one drills and in some team drills. Rod Walker's reporting one of the best plays came from Justin Hardy when he broke up a pass intended on a go route down the sideline for Cyril Grayson. He ran stride for the former LSU sprinter. So good performance by Justin Hardy. You love seeing the intensity. I don't mind seeing the scuffles. I don't mind seeing guys getting in each other's face early in training camp. Guys are fighting for roster spots. They want to show the coaching staff they have the will, they have the guts to go out there and get the job done. So I don't mind seeing that, as long as no one gets, you know, really hurt. You know, as long as no one's breaking their hand, punching a helmet, everything's good to go. We're going to put the Saints talk on hold momentarily when we come back after paying a few bills here on RP3 and Company. We'll talk AD Scott Woodward made a big announcement yesterday concerning LSU. We'll dive into it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Want to talk a little bit about Scott Woodward. Well, that didn't take long for him to make his presence known as the new athletic director, did it? In a story that kind of spread like wildfire yesterday afternoon, Scott Woodward made the announcement in a story by Tiger Rag's own Tyler Nunez, friend of the show, that the days of the LSU athletic department donating money, giving its profits, so to speak, a portion of its profits directly back to the university, is over. Now, is this something that maybe Scott Woodward was already thinking about doing when he took over the job? Possibly. Is this in reaction to the negative reaction to the fact that the TAF, Tiger Athletic Foundation, was able to raise $28 million to help build a new, or help renovate, rather, the football operations building on campus, and everyone being upset about that? Possibly. Maybe so. We don't necessarily know. What we do know, though, is that the fund transfer policy that was put in place by Joe Oliva is now over. And in Woodward's words, quote, it's a poor way to run a university, end quote. The new athletic department head made this announcement in an article by Tiger Rag's own Tyler Nunez. Now, LSU had been transferring, the athletic department had been transferring more than $66 million to the overall university budget. But that is now going to be stopped and being reevaluated under first-year athletic director Scott Woodward, an LSU alum himself. The fund transfer policy, if you remember, was first enacted under then-athletic director Joe Oliva back in 2012 and began a partnership between the athletic and academic branches of the university, where the athletics committed to provide $36 million over 5 years by annually transferring $7.2 million, plus a portion of its net surplus, specifically designed to support LSU's academic research, public service, and other missions. The athletic department has kept to the terms well beyond the five-year agreement. Once again, this started in 2012. It's now 2019. And also went beyond its initial pledge as the athletic budget boomed. Woodward told The Advocate on Monday that he started having, quote, long discussions, end quote, with university officials when he was hired in April. So this is something Scott Woodward addressed right off the bat, because here's the thing. LSU's the only athletic department in the SEC that was doing this. Alabama's not doing this. Auburn's not doing this. Texas A&M's not doing this. LSU is doing this. This was a Joe Oliva creation back in 2012. Woodward said no changes to the policy have yet occurred, but his comments do come on the heels of a controversy over the athletic and academic fundraising at LSU. We talked about it, how people were upset that the library still needs renovations, yet there's money to be spent on a football operations building. Once again, football operations building was funded, all $28 million of it, by private donations. University, the library, does not have $28 million worth of donations coming its way. Woodward said, quote, we want to continue being an important part of the university. We want to contribute to the university over time, but it has to decrease. We can't sustain a successful department without it. I'll say it again. We can't sustain a successful department without it. And that's the interesting thing here. Now, obviously, the timing of this is, you know, interesting, obviously. But in the story that Tyler Nunes wrote, which you can find right now at TigerRag.com, he also says this, quote, it's something that's very dangerous when universities rely on recurring money, especially from an auxiliary like the athletic department. So no, I think while I will always support the university in some form or fashion, we cannot sustain what we're currently doing, end quote. That tells you everything that you need to know. He, Scott Woodward, is putting everyone on notice that the athletic department is going to run the way he wants it to be ran, and that he's not here to help prop up anything else. And this is a guy who graduated from LSU. This is a man who used that library that everyone is up in arms about being in decrepit state. He worked and lived on campus. He went to classes in some of those other buildings that need repair. And he's telling you straight up, as soon as he's taken over the job, he's been on the job only a few months, he's like, we are not propping up. That is a dangerous thing to do. It's against the principles of Woodward to make sure that the athletic department of LSU props up the university. He's putting the university on notice. He's letting the state of Louisiana let them know in no certain terms, hey, get your act together. We're not going to be here contributing $7-plus million a year to help fund other projects. Run your university better. Have the state run the state better and do a better job, because we're not going to prop you guys up anymore. He also eschewed any responsibility that the Tiger Athletic Foundation might have to incentivize donors to donate to the LSU Foundation or the LSU Alumni Association. This is in the Tiger Rag article. Quote, I think that's the wrong question, he said when asked about that possibility. Quote, I think the right question is, what are current donors at TAF doing for the university? And I have a feeling that in both places I've been, Texas A&M and Washington, on average they give 1.5 times more to the academic side. I'm sure that's the case here. Woodward further stated in the Tiger Rag article, quote, you can't just our donors as TAF donors or LSU Foundation donors or Alumni Association donors or ag donors or whatever kind of donors you want to put in. You get across in all sorts of ways. We feed off each other, and it's a very healthy, positive thing, end quote. And Tyler writes in the article at TigerRag.com that reasoning somewhat echoed the words of LSU President F. King Alexander, who vaguely addressed the controversy Wednesday during the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the new Football Operations Center. This is what Alexander said that day, quote, I'd like to thank all the TAF donors who made this happen. Many of you guys, probably the vast majority, have supported athletics and academics on our campus on both sides of Nicholson Drive. We're proud that you've been able to contribute so much so consistently for our program and our university as we go forward, end quote. That's interesting. I've been told as well, off the record, that a lot of the people that donate through the Tiger Athletic Foundation also make donations to the university. But it just feels like it's easier to get people together to help an athletic venture than it is for the university. Once again, the university is publicly, is state-funded. Okay? State-funded. The $28 million facility on campus that they just opened for tours for the football team was done with private donations from the Tiger Athletic Foundation. They bankrolled it. It took them 7 years to make it, get it done. They needed Patrick Peterson and Tyron Matthew, former LSU stars, to come in and help push them over the limit, so to speak. Help close the deal. Help them get the job done. Woodward did tell Tyler Nunez in the Tiger Rag article that LSU Athletics may not directly contribute funds to the university anymore, but he doesn't want that to result in a lack of revenue. He just feels that it'll be healthier if the revenue to come from other avenues. Quote, we're going to continue to try to get better, not only at TAF, but I know President Alexander is working on the foundation, doing aggressive and good things, which is a matter of all of us alumni to step up and give back to the university. I think you'll see that going forward in a big way, end quote. That tells me that Athletic Director Scott Woodward has had multiple conversations with the president of the university and that the president of the university is well aware that this decision was being made and that this was coming. So your athletic director supports this. The president of the university supports this. So, people, donors, former LSU alumni, I guess you've been put on notice if you want things to be done for university that you need to step up and donate properly. And the state of Louisiana needs to get its act together when it comes to funding its public colleges. Plain and simple. Now, the Advocate's also reporting that LSU Athletics was permitted to pocket the first $3 million of a surplus to its reserve accounts, but agreed to send half of the remaining surplus to the university if there was more than $5 million left. Aliva, back in the day, called the policy a win-win for both the university and the athletic department when it was established, and the department regularly touted itself as one of the few institutions to have such a practice, not only in the SEC, but in the entire nation. Remember, though, Aliva came up with this policy during a time when higher education funding was being slashed by the state of Louisiana and when the sports TV contracts had not yet blown up in the Southeastern Conference with the SEC network having 18 different channels. So we'll see. We'll see what this does now moving forward. We'll see what happens. We'll see if this inspires folks to donate more. Remember, the LSU system launched a $1.5 billion fundraising campaign this March, which is the largest target amount for any such fundraising effort in the history of the state of Louisiana. LSU has an upcoming operating budget of $562 million. And according to the Advocate, administrators discovered nearly 2 weeks ago that the university will come up 3% short of having the money for the $562 million operating budget. Jay Blossman, Board of Supervisors member, has been appointed the leader of an ad hoc committee of five supervisors to find money to make sure the school makes its budget. So we'll see what the fallout's going to be of this moving forward. But Scott Woodward not taking any time whatsoever to start making his mark and start establishing his leadership with the LSU Athletic Department. We got to hit a break, but when we come back after these commercial messages, we're going to talk a little UL football. Raging Cajuns locked up two commitments over the weekend. We'll tell you all about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Let's talk a little UL Raging Cajun football, shall we? Billy Napier, after his first season at the helm of the Raging Cajun football team, led them to seven wins, a Sun Belt Western Division title, and a bowl game appearance. Built off of that momentum and had a tremendous recruiting class. The best in the Sun Belt Conference for the 2019 recruiting cycle, and the second best in the state behind LSU. Well, they're already working, been working on the 2020 class. And this past weekend, they picked up not one but two stars out of the state of Texas for the 2020 class. They got verbal commitments from three-star cornerback Dabari Hawkins and two-star tight end Christian Sabatini. That gives UL head coach now Billy Napier and his staff 14 commitments for the 2020 class, which according to 247 Sports ranks 72nd in the country and 2nd in the Sun Belt Conference. Both players made the announcement via the Twitter. Hawkins is a 6'2", 185-pound cornerback from Stafford, Texas. That's where he earned first-team All-District honors last season for Stafford High. He also took part in the Texas 7-on-7 state championships this past June. Hawkins made the announcement via Twitter. He also had scholarship offers from the likes of Vanderbilt out of the SEC, Tulane, Tulsa, Air Force, New Mexico State, and Texas Southern. But he's now claiming to be 100% committed. Hashtag Go Cajuns on the Twitter. He's holding, I believe, like Thor's hammer or sledgehammer or something in his profile pic while he's decked out in a Raging Cajuns uniform. Sabatini, meanwhile, is a 6'2", 239-pound tight end out of Plano, Texas. He also made his announcement on the Twitter machine, as they like to say. He's committing to the University of Louisiana, thanking Coach Napier, Coach Desimo, former Catholic High of New Iberia, star and Raging Cajun, great player as well. Coach Sawyer, Coach Sale, Coach Tony, and the entire staff for embracing me with open arms. Go Cajuns, hashtag culture. Sabatini, meanwhile, also had scholarship offers from the likes of UL Monroe, Southern Miss, and Army. So, here you go. Billy Napier and his staff have talked about recruiting the hell out of the state of Louisiana. They're doing that. I'm about to get to that. But they're also getting some of the better players from Texas and neighboring states. And here they get two guys that have offers from other teams that they're competing with in the state of Louisiana. Hawkins had a scholarship offer from Tulane. and Texas Southern out of Houston. They locked him up. Nope, you're coming to be a Raging Cajun. Sabatini had scholarship offer from Southern Miss, an old rival of UL, as well as UL Monroe, a rival, current rival of UL. So you keep that guy from going over there. Doing a great job on the recruiting trail, as always. For the 2020 class, 11 of the 14 verbal commitments are ranked as three-star prospects from 247 Sports. So that's a nice, strong base for the 2020 class. But six of those 14 commitments hail from the state of Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen. It's all about keeping the best players inside the state, keeping them committed to being a Raging Cajun. That's something that Billy Napier and his staff have preached over and over and over again. Who do they have locked up from the state as of right now for the 2020 class? They have Dante Fleming from East St. John, wide receiver. They have offensive guard Corey Marshall out of Northwood High School around Shreveport. They have wide receiver Kyron Lacey out of Thibodeau High. They also have defensive tackle Sonny Hazard out of Jesuit in New Orleans. They have an athlete, Tyree Skipper, out of Sophie B. Wright. And, of course, they have local product, star wide receiver Errol Rogers from LCA, Lafayette Christian Academy. And I would expect that haul of in-state prospects to increase the closer we get to the early signing period this fall and, of course, the traditional signing period in February of 2020. But the Raging Cajuns, recruiting never stops. Never stops for LSU, and it's definitely not stopping for Billy Napier and his staff as they picked up two more pledges, verbal commitments for the 2020 class in the past few days. By the way, UL Media Day will be this Thursday, so we'll have plenty more Raging Cajun talk coming up this week on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break, but after these messages, we're going to talk more New Orleans Saints. QB Challenge, Drew Brees, Zion Williamson. Oh, yeah, you're going to enjoy this. We'll talk about it after these messages right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on OUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We let off today's show talking about New Orleans Saints training camp day four. The big story coming out of Metairie yesterday was the fact that the Saints parted ways, cut Cam Meredith after just one season, a highly unproductive season which was marred by injuries by the former Chicago Bear. We also had some discussion about the battles going on, apparently a three-way battle, who's going to become the starting center for the team. And then we dived into LSU Athletic Director Scott Woodward making the announcement that there'll be no more money shared with the actual university from the athletic department. And, of course, UL locking up two more recruits for that 2020 class. But look, no one had more fun yesterday than Zion Williamson. Has anyone had more fun becoming a member of the greater New Orleans area than Zion Williamson has in the past few months? I mean, he's been fully embraced by everyone, including players for the New Orleans Saints, including Drew Brees, who is trying to pass the torch to him to become the face of the city for athletics. Well, Zion and Drew were once again at it yesterday. Now, Drew Brees has been competing in challenges every day after their training camp practices that began this week. There was a special guest in attendance for Monday's challenge, though, and that was New Orleans Pelicans rookie Zion Williamson, the number one overall draft pick, and now the face of the Pelicans franchise, had already made an appearance at Saints training camp on the opening day, but Brees then made the trip to the Pelicans practice facility to invite Williamson to the Monday edition of the quarterback challenge. So it was Zion Williamson, Drew Brees, JT Barrett, Taysom Hill, Teddy Bridgewater, and AK Alvin Kamara all attempted to make shots on a hoop set up inside the Saints indoor practice facility. I'll give you just a basic breakdown of what occurred. The competitors had to shoot from different targets placed on the ground, with each target corresponding to a different point value, so forth and so forth. There was throwing footballs and making free throws. It was a combination of basketball and football. It looked like a great game. I wanted to play it myself. But here is number 9, breaking it down, explaining exactly what the challenge is yesterday inside the Saints practice facility.
All right, here we are, Saints and Pelicans QB challenge. Number 4 here at Saints training camp. We decided to come inside because we have a very special guest, Zion Williamson from the Pelicans. And who joined the party too? AK, Alvin Kamara. Here he is. He's here.
All time. So I just came out here to do a little something, just chilling.
So here's what we're going to do. We got a little combo match here, right? So this is going to involve shooting baskets. It's also going to be involved throwing footballs at the basket. So here's what we're going to do, all right? 3 shots with the basketball. The first one from the hoop on the left side, that's worth 2 points. The second one from the hoop on the right, that's worth 2 points. Then you'll come back to the NBA plus 3-point line here. This will be worth 3 points, all right? Then you're going to go back for a 30-yard throw with a football. If you throw it and hit anywhere on the backboard, that's worth 1. If you're inside the square, it's worth 2. If you hit the rim, it's worth 3. If you go inside the bucket, it's worth 5. Then you get to go back for a bonus throw from the 40-yard line, which would be a 50-yard throw. If you, same point values apply, but if you make that shot, it's an automatic win. Automatic win. Zion said, that's money in the bank. He's got this. I'd also like to say that, man, before we started here, Zion said that all the QBs and AK are going to get his first pair of brand Jordan Zions. We appreciate that. Thank you, bro. Yeah. Hey, I'm 13. What size?
I'm 11 and a half, brother.
If you got it, if you got it.
Well, okay. Hey, Jordan, yeah. Brand Jordan. Yeah, that's right. First pair. Here we go. All right, let's get it started. AK's first, then Zion, then the QBs. Hey, make your picks right now. Let's go.
My favorite part of that is the fact I don't believe Zion agreed to give the first pairs of his new brand Jordan brand shoes. But Brees is like, I'm running this show, Rook. This is how this is going to go down. You're going to give us all pairs of your new sneakers. By the way, love that. And yeah, growing up, like I did, watching the old quarterback skills challenge where they would have to hit a moving target, Dan Marino and Joe Montana back in the day. I love this kind of thing. But you could just tell that this is Drew Brees' baby. Like, he gets really excited. He has diagrams and the whole nine yards. He's plotting this out. He's like, how can I merge basketball and football into one perfect challenge? Let's do this. You could just hear the passion in his voice. He sounded like he was ready to go out there and lead the Saints on a game-winning drive. And this is just a silly quarterback challenge that he's doing just to bond with his teammates. By the way, Brees and Bridgewater were the top scorers after all the players went through a round, and that led to a sudden death round. I'll give you one guess who won the sudden death round. It was Drew Brees. But once again, this is all about embracing Zion Williamson. This is all about having him part. They're making a conscious effort. The Saints are. Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis, and Drew Brees in particular, are making a conscious effort to have Zion Williamson be part of the Saints family. Having him be part of the fever pitch that is Saints fandom, okay? They are embracing him unlike anybody else they've ever done this with. You would think Zion Williamson is a starter for them on their own team. But there is a conscious effort being made to not only pass the torch to Zion, but to have him be not only part of the New Orleans culture, but to be part of the Saints culture and have a lot of that goodwill that the Saints have built up with the community, not only in New Orleans, but the state of Louisiana and the entire Gulf Coast, and have that goodwill kind of transferred to him and have him be part of that and have him experience that. I love that. I love this decision by Drew Brees and the Saints to do this because it's a smart decision. You get the Saints fans to love Zion, then hopefully they will start loving basketball as well. You see how this works. They're neighboring. Look, Gail Benson owns both teams. Why not do this? They never done this in the past. Now they're committed to doing this. Now they're committed to having a winner. Got David Griffin there in the Pels, the whole nine yards. We know what he's done. Every step along the way has been magnificent so far. But the Saints are doing their part to have Zion as part of this. Part of the culture. Part of not only the culture of New Orleans, but also of the Saints. And Drew Brees is having himself a ton of fun. First of all, big ups to him to getting those Jordan brand shoes of Zion's. I love how he did that. And of course, Zion can't say no now. Kind of schooled the rookie there. Kind of took advantage of the rook. Took advantage of the 19-year-old. That's such a veteran move to do. But he's having a ton of fun with these quarterback challenges. From the first 3 days of Saints camp, the challenges have included the following. Dartboard targets, Gatorade bottle targets, and there was even a task where the players had to use turtle shells from the popular legendary Nintendo game Mario Kart to hit paper cutouts of Breeze's face. Tremendous effort here by Breeze of having fun with the rest of his quarterbacks.
I'm the best!
Ha 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 ha! Nice. I love that Mario Kart drop there. Having fun. He's having fun with his guys. This is why he's one of the best leaders out there. He is the leader and the face of the New Orleans Saints franchise because he does things. He goes and does the extra effort. He'll go and work out in the offseason with members of the military to get an edge in training. He's always doing something. He's building relationships with his wide receivers in the offseason and his running backs. He's doing these challenges. He's embracing stars from another sport in Zion Williamson. This is why number 9 has been so special for not only the New Orleans Saints, but for the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana.
RP3.
Yes, Cody Schutz, good morning to you, sir.
What this reminds me of, what this screams, this whole quarterback competition and Drew Brees and playing Mario Kart on a football field, what that screams to me is Drew Brees had the time of his life hanging out with the Dude Perfect guys when he went over there.
That's
yeah,
right.
He's done multiple episodes.
He's
been on YouTube.
Guys.
He's been on Nickelodeon with them. I think Drew Brees has got the Dude Perfect fever right now, and he's spreading it all throughout the New Orleans sports scene.
I forgot totally about that. That makes great sense. I want to see the Mario Kart one, though. That seems like it was pretty fun. I watched the whole video of the basketball hybrid football challenge yesterday. It was enjoyable. Watching Zion and Alvin Kamara try to take part of it was hilarious as well. But Breeze knows how to team build better than most. He always has, and that's why he's such a well-respected guy in that locker room. That's why they love him. And just how much fun is it that you go through the grueling process of an intense training camp session, you get to go into the inside the indoor practice facility and go have fun, clown around with your friends, with your teammates, and with Zion Williamson. And I just, you know, that's what's also the more refreshing aspect of this is that they're including Zion like they are. Because that relationship wasn't there with Anthony Davis, right? But now there's new leadership in place for the Pels and the Saints. Now look, these Saints players don't have to do this. Gail Benson is not forcing them to embrace the basketball team. Hell, they could even be more removed from the situation because Mickey Loomis's role with the Pelicans has now been regulated, has been minimized, right? There should be even more division. We're just going to worry about us. We're going to worry and be focused about winning a Super Bowl, bringing that second Lombardi trophy back home to New Orleans. But they're not doing that. From jump, they're embracing this. They're embracing what David Griffin is doing as Vice President of Basketball Operations. They are embracing Zion Williamson. Okay? They're making him feel like he is part of the city, that he's part of the culture, of athletics, of music, of the history of this city. It's a full-on embrace of saying, we have your back, we got nothing but love for you, and we want you to be supported. We want you to feel like you're being supported. We want you to feel like you're part of this. We want you to feel like you're part of New Orleans. Welcome to the family. It feels very much like, hey, Zion, welcome to the family. You've either been adopted or you've married into our family. We love you. We got your back. Welcome. Let's head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline. Halftime is on the phone. Good morning to you, Halftime. How are you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing good. First of all, RP3, I want to say this is my first time calling your show. I'm a long-time caller. This is my first time really calling your show. I enjoy your show, and I apologize for it taking so long for me to call your show.
I appreciate the phone call, man. I appreciate the phone call. I know about you, Halftime. You're a legend. You're a legendary caller, my friend.
Well, this is what I want to tell you guys. I actually, this weekend, we actually went to the camp this weekend, Saturday, to the Saints training camp.
Okay.
And I'm listening to everything you're talking about as far as the Saints and the Pelicans. And my wife kind of made a note. You can see that it's like the whole culture. Like Ms. Benson is really, she's taking care of the fans. I mean, it was laid out for the fans. The only reason, we had a good spot. The only reason I didn't get an autograph was because the Saturday, it started in Metairie, it started lightning. It didn't rain yet, but it started lightning and stuff, and so if they can call the practice. And I might be an VIP member with 103.7, but I'm not a VIP member with the Saints. So I couldn't get in on the inside practice, but, you know, everybody that was, all the majority of the fans had to leave, and only the VIP members were able to go in on the inside practice. You can see, like, you go to park, there's a nice bus pick you up, nice shuttle, pick you up to where the practice facility is. It's just everything nice. But what I want to tell you is, I put my name on the wait list. I know it's a long shot. I put my name on the wait list for Saints season tickets. And also put my name on the wait list for Pelicans tickets. And it's amazing. They actually called me back, the Pelicans. And I thought it was a prank call. I thought it was like, you know, trying to steal my identity or something. They were like, this is the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm like, what? You know, I couldn't believe it. I actually hung up, called back to make sure, and it was. And I do want to try to get season tickets, but you can see the whole culture is changing. And it's like you say, like, they're trying to get Zion. They're trying to get the fans. They want to get everybody to root for the Pelicans. I was listening to what you guys were talking about, and I just want to call and add that to it to let you guys know they're really, Miss Benson is really doing a good job of trying to change the whole culture for everybody to love the Pelicans the way they love the Saints.
Halftime, appreciate the phone call, brother. Thank you so much, and have a blessed rest of your day, my friend.
You too.
Halftime makes a great point there, and I've said it before. It reminds me a lot, just organically, two separate, totally different situations. But what happened with the outpouring of fan support in the city and the region following Katrina with the Saints, it feels that way now with the Pels. Totally different situations. Tragedy on one hand, just bad front office and agents meddling this time around. But the response in the aftermath of both has some similarities, and you're seeing just an organic appreciation and love of that franchise in the community from both sides, the ownership and the fan base, and it's a great thing to see. We got to hit a break, but when we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk a little bit about what the LHSAA did yesterday. An announcement came out about select schools. We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. So, yesterday, something interesting happened in Baton Rouge, and it wasn't only the article about Scott Woodward deciding to no longer have the LSU athletic department give money to the university. It had to do with the state high school association. Select schools in the state created a new group. That's right. It's a big change. A two-thirds vote was needed. Two-thirds vote majority of the state select schools voted Monday, and they formed the new Louisiana Select Association, which will serve as a sub-organization of the LHSAA that will be focusing on administrating championship events. But this is, to be clear, isn't seen as a group of schools breaking away from the LHSAA. There were 71 of the state's 108 select schools on hand for the meeting being held at Turlings Catholic right here in Lafayette, 66 of whom voted to ratify the LSA bylaws. Remember, in January, member schools voted to allow select schools to break away and host their events, championship events, apart from the traditional locations. Questions about the separate championship structure have loomed since that vote. Select schools are charged with hosting championship events and the sports split among select, non-select guidelines, football, boys and girls, basketball, baseball, and softball. Over the weekend, Robin Fambrose reporting, Catholic High Athletic Director J.P. Kelly, Catholic High of Baton Rouge, said, quote, this is not an attempt to split away from the LHSAA. In fact, Adam McDowell, who is the assistant executive director, was at our meeting in New Orleans, and the schools there said that they are 100% in favor unification of the LHSAA. We've offered to do anything we can to help that process. The LHSAA has helped us by answering questions over the last few months. This is a way for select schools to be organized, end quote. I don't know. I don't know if that is exactly 100% true. I understand that they want to be more organized because that is going to be a huge undertaking that they're going to have to deal with, right? Picking select school sites, championship sites. Once again, give you, for example, let's say Turlings Catholic or let's say St. Thomas More. St. Thomas More is the number one overall seed, or they're the highest seed in football. They can decide to host the state championship game at Cajun Field if they can arrange it. But there's a lot of moving parts here, okay? A lot of moving parts. So are they doing this to organize? Sure. Are they trying to lay the groundwork to eventually leave the state? The cynic in me says yes as well. We'll dive deeper into this conversation with Robin Fambrough from The Advocate, who was there at the meeting reporting on it. She'll join us at 8:02 right here on RP3 and Company. And we'll also talk about that and much more with our next guest, George Faust from KFY. We got to hit a break, pay a few bills, ladies and gentlemen. Got to keep the lights on, you know. But you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And it's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of today's show. He is the longtime sports director of KLFY, friend of the program and of the station. It's the one and only, the Dean Kane himself, George Faust. Fausty, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing good, man. I'm just kind of getting ready for the road back to getting the kids out to school, you know. That's kind of getting everything set for that. But I'm doing good this morning. Up and ready.
I know the feeling. I know the feeling. I share your excitement. about that. We'll leave it at that. George, yes. I want to get your thoughts about what occurred yesterday with the select schools in the state of Louisiana creating the Louisiana Select Association. 70 of the 108 select schools voted to ratify the Constitution, forming the LSA. They selected a CEO, a deputy CEO, approved board members, and even had discussions about sites and structure for select championship events throughout the day yesterday. The meeting was held here in Lafayette. This, of course, goes back to the birth of the LSA, based on that meeting with Terling's Catholic High Principal Mike Boyer. Your thoughts on what occurred yesterday with the creation of the LSA?
Well, I think it's a smart idea. I think you need something like that because, as one of the coaches was telling me, or told us, is that they need to have a unified voice when it comes to dealing with the LHSAA because they have a situation where schools are all over the place. These select schools are, North Louisiana, all the way down in New Orleans. They're all over. So I think, as Principal Boyer put it, he said they were geographically challenged because they're all over the state, and they needed some kind of organization to be able to speak on behalf of all the schools, and I think that's kind of what they did, and I think it's a fine idea. I mean, they're not trying to leave the LHSAA, which I know was an option for a little bit, having talked to some athletic directors and coaches over the past couple of years since the select non-select thing has become a reality. That was definitely an idea that had entered some of the schools' minds.
But George, George, I have to ask you though. I understand that you feel like they're saying that they don't want to leave, but I don't know. The cynic in me says, okay, you're creating an organization, you're creating bylaws, you're hiring a CEO, you're hiring a deputy CEO, you're putting together a board member. It sure does seem like you're creating a foundation for an organization that can go and live all by itself.
Well, that's not how they're setting it up, though. I mean, I understand that, too. I mean, I can see that as well, but that's not how they're portraying it or what they're saying. Now, I personally think that I wouldn't have a problem with it if the select schools decided, hey, we need to be a separate entity, because a lot of times they're outnumbered in all the votes of everything with regards to select and non-select when it comes to voting. So they will never win if they stay in the same system. So that's why I think they're trying to do this, to see if this works and helps them with regards to making changes that can benefit their schools. And you can't fault anybody for wanting to make changes that are going to help improve them, because, I mean, that's why we got into this non-select bull from the get-go. I mean, this stuff is – it's because one school felt like that would give them a better chance to do something and or compete at a higher level. And so – anyway, but yeah, I understand that, and maybe that is the case. Maybe they do have a foresight of, hey, look, down the road, if things don't go the way we need them to go to kind of even the playing field, so to speak, then maybe we can branch out and have a completely different organization. And I honestly don't have a problem with that. I mean, that's the way that. The LHSAA, I think the LHSAA kind of created that situation by doing this non-select thing. This wasn't something that, the majority of the schools that I talked to or the people at school that I talked to, the majority of those guys in select schools didn't want to split in the first place. Now, did it benefit a lot of the schools? I think it did. I think STM's a school that benefited tremendously from a split. Not saying they couldn't have won a state championship the other way, because they've done it before, but
right.
But the problem is now the sport has not, now when you get to the playoffs, the number one seed, and let's just take football for example, the number one seed plays a team that has two wins, and how does a two-win team get into the playoffs? Well, that's what's happened because of the select non-select. So Notre Dame, there's another team that the probably Catholic High, New Iberia, there's a lot of schools that have benefited from this with regards to select, non-select, but I don't think it benefits the sport as a whole or the kids because the competition that you're competing against isn't as competitive. It isn't as there's not as high of a quality of product that you're putting out on the field. When you have a team who's 10-0 playing a team that has three wins in the first game of the playoffs, how did that team make it to the playoffs? Well, we didn't have enough teams, so everybody gets a trophy. Everybody gets into the playoffs. I just think that's ridiculous. But
I agree with that point. I agree with all those points. But I just don't see the benefit of you're punishing the kids by taking away the experience of being able to play in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. No offense to Cajun Field. Yeah. I love covering events there. But they hold a jamboree there, George. And now you're saying if you're STM or you're Notre Dame, you're like, well, we can play at Cajun Field. Well, you're taking away the experience because 99% of the kids that are on those rosters are never going to play college football. They're never going to make it to the bigs. They're never going to play pro football. And you're taking away because of pettiness between public schools and private schools and because of this division. You're punishing the kids. No one ever thinks about the kids here. It's all adults thinking about decisions for themselves. No one is, so far through this whole process, has ever come out and said, you know what, let's ask the kids, let's ask the actual student-athletes what they think. No one cares what the student-athletes think. They're thinking, well, this will be beneficial for us and our school because we can make money this way, instead of thinking, taking away an experience, which has been a kind of a rite of passage for anyone that's played football here in the state for the past 20-some-odd years. That's my problem, and that's my biggest issue with this.
I don't disagree with that. I am saddened by the fact that now schools don't get to play the state championship or won't play the state championship in the Superdome. And that's the crown jewel of high school football,
Exactly.
Being able to say, hey, I'm going, and are you going to be able, if you're, I don't know, FTM, Notre Dame, whoever makes it to a state championship, I mean, are we going to play the state championship at Crowley Middle School? You know, if Notre Dame gets there, how are you going to fit all the people in there if they're playing a team from North Louisiana? I don't know if I like that either. I can tell you I don't like it. I can't believe that they would even, and that was Principal Boyer at Turlings. He came up with that proposal a few months ago, and it passed. And I don't know if I like that. I think the whole experience, on the flip side, they say it's saving money for the school because they don't have to travel to New Orleans. I know Coach Cook at Notre Dame, that's an expense for them to get there, get a bus, get a couple of buses.
And the same thing for Catholic High of New Iberia with Brent Indes.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Sure. And so it's definitely an expense. So I think you're right on the point of kids. I think they're trying to think about expenses and not, sending the raising tuition, I guess, to make sure that happens. But maybe I think that's going to happen anyway. They're going to raise tuition every year. That's the way it works. But I'm saddened to see it leave the Superdome. I am. There's no doubt about it. I wish they would leave it? I do. Call me a traditionalist or whatever you want to call me. But,
Not a traditionalist, not really, George. I would just call you having common sense and going, you know what? The way it was working just fine. Can we just go back to that instead of all of this ridiculousness that we've had to suffer through now for multiple years?
And you're like, hey, we get to go to New Orleans. Oh, you're going to the Superdome? No, we're going to go play at Yeoman Stadium in Tulane for the state championship, that's a beautiful facility. Don't get me wrong, but it's not the Superdome. It's not where, the big NFL team plays. It's that whole experience. I mean, the first story we always do when a team makes it to the Superdome is, wow, how are these kids going to react to walking into that Superdome and looking up at the bright light? I mean, I remember when Iota made it back in the early 2000s, late 90s. I mean, that was the big, turn out the lights when you leave Iota. We're all headed to the big city, and then all these kids get there and they look up at these. I mean, every school's like that. I mean, how many kids?
It's special,
how many kids,
George.
Don't ever go to a Saints game. They don't get that opportunity. It's just not there for them. So, you know, this is their one chance to get into the dome. I agree, man. I love the fact that made Louisiana high school sports unique, and it made us. Where do they play the Texas state championships? Cowboy Stadium. You know,
right.
there's a reason for that. You know, because it's a reward for working your tail off and making it to the state championship. I agree with that. I completely agree with that. I understand why you do the other thing. I didn't say I had to like it. I understand it though.
Talking with George Faust, he's the sports director at KLFY. George, I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to talk a little Raging Cajuns. I want to get your thoughts on the recruiting class that they're lined up. They got two more pledges over the weekend, poached them out of Texas, but yet still the majority of the recruiting class for 2020 is from the state of Louisiana. What do you think of the constant efforts by Billy Napier and his staff on the recruiting trail?
Look, that's the way this world is. I mean, with college football, you get the number one recruiting class in the Sun Belt in your first year recruiting, and that doesn't stop. You can't rest on your laurels. And I think, well, obviously Coach Napier knows that. I mean, he's the guy. He's a guy here who has a focus, has a vision, and knows what he wants to make this program, and he's doing a phenomenal job of it. Just the fact that you continue to get big time, you know, top-tier recruits is quite impressive for Coach Napier, and that says a lot about not only his character but what he's selling, because, you know, let's be honest, in 3 years, if he continues to win the way he is, his name's going to be on a lot of lists for other jobs. And so you have to sell not only yourself to the player, but you have to sell the school. And there's so much to love about the University of Louisiana, and I think that makes it a little bit easier of a sell. You know, you're not going to some place where there's nothing going on. You're coming to an area that's thriving. There's a lot of things to show a college kid that, hey, look, you come here, you study hard, you're going to play football. And then there is things that you can do, you know, on your personal time to enjoy your life as a college student, as well as, you know, put out a top notch football product when you get on the field. So I think he's doing a great job, and I you know, it's never ending. You know, that's how recruiting works. It's you have to stay on top of it and make sure that you consistently are getting the guys, the best guys for your program.
We're wrapping things up here with George Faust, sports director at KLFY on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. George, Raging Cajun Media Day is Thursday. We'll get to talk to some players. We'll talk to the assistant coaches and, of course, head coach Billy Napier. What are you looking forward to the most on Thursday, or what are you hoping to have answered come Thursday, brother?
Look, I'm excited to talk, because, you know, the biggest, I always go here. I know a lot of people do, but I always like to talk to see how the quarterbacks, you know, whether it's Levi Lewis, who Coach Napier said at Media Day is Sunbelt Media Day. He said that he's the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak. I like to see that, because you remember last year that Levi was in kind of that, you know, he'd come in every, whatever, fourth or fifth series or whatever it was. And so now this is basically Coach Napier's saying, hey, look, here's your team, man. Go make us go make it happen. And I think I'm anxious to see how, because I remember talking to him last year, and just the way he handled himself was very impressive. And so I'm looking to see a little bit more maturity out of that young man as he kind of progresses and takes over the squad. And then who knows who else might emerge. You know, that's what the beauty of this is. iron sharpening iron, so to speak. You know, like having two top tier, two or three top tier guys that can make each other better. That's what I'm looking. I want to see about that. And then I love the story of Deuce Wallace. You know, I mean, STM product goes to the Cajuns. His dad played there. Donnie, and I really like that story. And of course, Deuce was one of the representatives for the Cajuns at Sunbelt Media Days that just passed. And so, you know, he's such a well-spoken young man, and he knows what he exemplifies leadership and doing things the right way. And so, yeah, I like to talk to him and see how that defense is going to be. He's kind of the voice of the defense. If I had to pick somebody right now, Deuce is that guy who kind of speaks for that defensive squad. And I think people, you know, maybe they don't know a whole lot about him, but he's definitely a guy who can, you know, has broad shoulders and welcomes that opportunity to talk about the Cajuns and their defense and what they can do in the coming season.
Fausti, appreciate your time as always, brother. I'll see you out there on Thursday. Enjoy the rest of your day, my friend.
All right, man. Good talking to you.
It's George Faust, sports director of KLFY, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got to hit a break real quick, but when we come back, we'll have a new poll question for you to vote on right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. We just wrapped up a tremendous conversation with George Faust of KLFY, and a lot of it had to deal with the creation of the Louisiana Select Association and whether or not that means an end to the LHSAA as the body that governs select and non-select schools. Terrific conversation. Cody Schutz, we asked the people a poll question yesterday. Let's give the final results of that and let them know what the new poll question is that they can go vote on at 1037thegame.com.
We asked you if you thought Emmanuel Butler, the intriguing undrafted rookie for the Saints at training camp, if we asked you if you thought he was going to make the team. 86% say yes, he will make the team. So a landslide victory for Emmanuel Butler. I agree.
It just got easier with Cam Meredith being cut.
Well, right. I wonder how many of those votes came in after that news dropped. You're right. But now we have the new poll question up, like you said, my friend. And the new poll question has to do with the high school football talk that we just, or the high school sports talk in general we just heard. We want to know from you if you think the forming of the LSA, is that going to help unify the LHSAA or help further tear it apart?
You can go to 1037thegame.com and vote how you feel on that. You can vote throughout the day. We'll also throw out a link on our Twitter account, 1037thegame. That's going to wrap up this hour. Coming up, we're going to continue that high school talk along with one of the best high school reporters in the state of Louisiana, Robin Fambro from the Baton Rouge Advocate will be joining us live coming up at 8:02 right here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ragin' Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, and, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We talked earlier in today's show about the meeting of select school administrators and coaches that occurred yesterday here in Lafayette, and they helped pave the way for the creation of the Louisiana Select Association, with 70 of the state's 108 select schools voting to ratify the Constitution. Of those 70, a vast majority voted for it. 66 voted to approve the new Louisiana Select Association Constitution, with Shreveport's Evangeline Christian being the lone no vote. Four schools did abstain: Ouachita Christian, Lee, McKinley, and Scotlandville. We'll talk more about this and dive deeper into if this means that there's going to be further division between the select schools and the non-select schools, or if this is going to help bring them together with our next guest. She is the best high school beat writer in the state of Louisiana. It's the one and only Robin Fambro from the Baton Rouge Advocate. Good morning, Robin. How are you today?
Wow, that's quite a build-up. I don't know if I can live up to that. We'll give it a shot.
I'm sure you'll deliver as always, my friend. Robin, your initial reaction to what occurred yesterday?
Well, I wasn't really surprised by it, because what people don't understand, people are saying this is going to make it worse, this is going to, you know, separate things further. You know, it could lead to separate associations totally. And, I mean, those things certainly are possibilities. But what's at the heart of this is Mike Boyer's proposals that passed in January that, you know, give the select schools the control over their championship events, where they break away from the traditional LHSAA events and have championships on their own. They had to have a structure. They had to have organization. And it's kind of, wait, they did that? No, they did what? Well, for two or three months, what you heard was, gee, those guys aren't organized. They don't know what they're doing. Well, now they are. They're organized and they have a plan. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. A lot of it is to administer these championships. So what that does in the long run, especially with regard to the thing that Mr. Eddie Bonine, the executive director, and his staff were charged with doing, with coming up with plans to possibly bring things back together, not sure what's going to happen with that. Not sure how that's going to be shaped now. I do know that, you know, Bonine was very consistent during the convention in January. He really urged Mike to back away from those proposals, to hold them, because he felt like it was a step closer to what you would call dual governances. In other words, two associations. And, you know, there was the same discussion, very similar discussion in June, when J.P. Kelly from Catholic and John LeBlanc of Loyola, who's the select representative on the executive committee for the LHSAA, appeared, where that's when they first mentioned the possibility of forming the LSA. And, you know, there's different ways of framing this, different ways of perception. Yes, they had to get organized. But the thing that's concerning to some is that, you know, you form this association and it looks like you're taking a step away from us. Whereas the select schools will tell you, and that's the very lead in my story, that it's a means to an end, not a means to put an end to, you know, being part of the LHSAA, is that this was not intended to be a step toward anything like that. They see themselves as being like the Coaches Association or the ADs Association or one of the coaches groups, you know, like the softball coaches or football coaches, who will bring proposals or who will, you know, have a little bit more say. And, you know, they've organized themselves. They have representatives. They have a board now. J.P. Kelly of Catholic is going to serve as the first CEO for the first 10 months until June of next year as they try to get things organized. And, you know, it's just going to be interesting. There's going to be a lot of questions about perception. What do the public schools feel about this? And, you know, I think there have already been some that have maybe expressed some concern and, I don't know, displeasure. There were some select schools there who had some concerns yesterday, but when they discussed the structure, how they were going to go through things, I think that's part of the reason why the vote was what it was.
We're talking with Robin Fambro of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Robin, do you feel, in your experience, do you feel that the two sides can come together and become a unified state body once again with Eddie Bonine as the executive director?
You know, that's a tough question. And the thing, framing it with Eddie is kind of interesting because the split, of course, didn't begin with him.
That's correct.
He's been charged the whole time with trying to bring it back together. And there have been different ideas, and I think that's part of the concern. Part of the concern even select schools have is that there have always been proposals and things that have been put up, and I believe there's going to be another one put up by a former executive committee member from your area, and I actually have a copy of it, Tommy Byler from North Vermilion.
Yeah.
And he puts together – he's got some good thoughts. In the past, you've had his is – there's some success factor things there. If you win X number of titles or appear in a title game so many years, you have to move up in class. And then, there are other things. There have been other things through the years. There have been people who have discussed multipliers, which that's used in Arkansas, where you, if you have a wider area you can draw from, say like a metropolitan area school, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, or whatever, or I'm not sure. I think Shreveport would fall in there too, and I guess you could maybe say the same thing about Lafayette and Monroe to some reason, because they would be able to draw from a wider area, especially the schools that are magnets or whatever. And it's a way to kind of, as they say, level the playing field there. So it's, you know, Louisiana, as we've always said, is a unique state. And it would be selling people on that. Now, you know, Jay Roth from Archbishop Rummel had an interesting point yesterday. He was one of the last people I spoke with, you know, before we all left. And he believes a lot now depends on coaches. Yes, the principals have the votes, but the coaches, you've got a group of coaches who have been around for years that have all worked together. And he believes that, by and large, the coaches want everything together. And it's on them to educate their administrators, because there's always a high turnover for principals. That's one of the things about this that's always mentioned, is that every 3 or 4 years you have like a third of the principals that turn over. Well, educate your principals, explain to them that we're better playing together in some form, which I don't think would be the traditional form. Maybe a multiplier or whatever. But we'll see. I just don't know. I just don't know what's going to happen.
Robin, let me ask you this. And this has been my stance on this just personally. I understand why we got to the split to begin with. I don't agree with it, but I understand why it occurred. Okay. And I understand what the select schools are doing now, trying to get more organized. I understand it all. My biggest issue here is it seems like no one has reached out to the actual student athlete and asked them viewpoint.
They are. There is a poll that the LHSAA is doing.
They're currently doing it right now?
Yes, they are. That was part of that component that besides just polling the schools, and the schools received a survey last week that I think they have until August 9th to fill out. They are polling students, and not just their – at first it was thought to be just, you know, just your student advisory committee, which is maybe 20 kids. No, they are reaching out to, my understanding is that Kate, who's Adams, who's in charge of the media end of it, is, has a role in that, where they're reaching out to, they're trying to, I think, get a sampling of kids from all schools. Now, I'd be real interested in that. And my just, I know what you're going to get if you go up and you ask a kid, you know, what do you think? Because I've done it. My concern is, you know, don't coach them. Don't tell them what to say.
There we go.
Either way, or either side. But, yeah, they are reaching out to student-athletes as part of this. And they're also, again, and this has been done in the past, too, polling your coaches. So, you know, I think the principals are going to be polled. You're going to have coaches, and you're going to have students.
I'll be interesting to see how that those results are, and if it skews one way or another. And my other thing, Robin, with this, and we're talking with Robin Fambro of the Baton Rouge Advocate here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. My other point to that is I'm not taking anything away from Cajun Field, okay? And there's been a lot of talk of, well, if we hold a state championship, if it's Notre Dame or STM, we can hold it at Cajun Field. I'm not knocking that. Cajun Field, I've covered games there. I love going to Cajun Field. My problem is you take away from the kids of being able to have the opportunity, because 99% of them are never going to play college ball or even reach to the pros. You take away the experience of playing inside the Superdome because they're going to go play a game at a facility that they played their jamboree at. And I just – that's my bigger problem, and call me old-fashioned that way, but that's – I just – it means something to those kids to be able to play inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome,
well,
to play where Drew Brees played.
That's going to be an interesting point of that survey. One of the things with it, though, is going to be with these separate championships. Right now, there is a option that would allow them to play this year in the Superdome like they have always. That's something that John LeBlanc has been – that's something Eddie Bonine's worked on. And John LeBlanc is charged with polling the select schools. One of the first things I asked him after the meeting yesterday at the end of it is, why didn't you poll him today? And his answer, and it was a good one, was that he didn't want to take away from the people who were doing what they were doing because they had worked very hard to prepare for this. And then he felt like this survey would be a separate thing. So I'll be curious to see what he yields with that. Now, I was told yesterday that by and large, the select schools weren't too keen on the idea of doing that for several reasons. And, you know, if they can just do it the way it is and it's, you know, it's part of the process we used to have, I guess it's okay. But another thing that kind of muddies the water, too, is you've had people in the select group have kind of informally reached out to different venues just to gauge whether they would be interested in events.
Right.
And of all of them, and this is no surprise, the Superdome would be the most expensive. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. It's going to be interesting to see the reaction of others, the perception outside, be it some of the sponsors, some of the other folks who are instrumental in putting on high school championship events. One of the things that they did, and the first step would be to get all of the football schools, since football is first, to forego their right to host a game. Then the select schools would have the option to, you know, negotiate or maybe get bids for a venue. But they have to have all the schools in line first. All the schools who were there yesterday did forego, including Evangel, who voted against it. But there were, you know, you had basically, by the time the meeting was over, probably closer to 80. There were some who came in late after the vote just for traffic because the meeting started at 9 a.m. and you had people coming a long distance. So, you know, it's going to be interesting just to see how all of this is shaped and how they all feel about it. Because I was a little surprised by that, but they're looking at, would it be the Cajun Dome? Would it be Southeastern? Would it be Tulane? Those are considered to be football options.
Robin, tremendous stuff as always. Keep up the great reporting there with the Baton Rouge Advocate. I know you're gearing up, putting the finishing touches on that football tab, which is just easy work, right? That takes no time at all for you, right?
Oh no, not at all. And we're gonna have more of a daily presence today this year. Kind of a little bit of a different work in terms of what we're doing for high schools. We'll still do the college and professional thing, or the college LSU tab, but a lot of the high school stuff is going to be geared more for being in the daily section. So that's going to be an interesting thing too as we move forward. But as one of my bosses said last week, you know, it's getting late earlier. I said, "Yep, that's true."
Not much time. He'll be here in no time flat. Well, Robin, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Robin Fambro, Baton Rouge Advocate, breaking down the LSA being created and what that means for the state. We got to hit a break, but we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little basketball. We're going to talk LSU. That's right. Some changes happen. One player leaves, another one joins Will Wade's roster. We'll talk about it next, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is the producer extraordinaire. The man's on the ones and twos, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Some news coming out of Baton Rouge yesterday concerning the LSU men's basketball program and confirmed by Will Wade. Walk-on guard Will Reese, it's a name that you may be familiar with, the 6'3" guard who joined the team as a walk-on last season, has left the program to solely concentrate on obtaining a degree in finance. He was a former star at Anacoco High, where he was a two-sport athlete. And he joined the basketball team following a two-year stint as a relief pitcher for Paul Maneri in the LSU baseball team. But Reese, who won a couple of state championships at Anacoco, a Class B school there in Vernon Parish, has decided to just focus on getting his degree to set up his life moving forward. Wade said Monday, quote, "Yeah, he's an unbelievable person. He's a good practice player. He helped us prepare for games," end quote. So that means there's possibly a spot there on the roster. Well, who's going to replace the two-sport star for Manacoco, who led that program to a pair of Class B state basketball titles in 2015 and 16 and was a three-time All-State baseball player and a three-year member of the SEC's Academic Honor Roll? I'm glad you asked. A guy who lit up LSU last year. That's right. Parker Edwards from Southeastern Louisiana. That's right. Who enrolled in summer school at LSU and has taken part in the offseason strength and conditioning work with the program. Reese's spot will be filled by Parker Edwards. Now, Edwards is a state product. He went to St. Paul's of Covington, but he's best remembered for the amazing shooting performance he put on against LSU in the season opener last November the 6th. Edwards scored 25 points, a game-high 25 points, including going 6 of 8 from beyond three-point range in that game. Edwards scored more than 2,000 points back in high school. So he's now going to be joining the LSU team, basketball team. So one walk-on leaves, a former Southeastern Lion joins the LSU basketball team. So a little bit of news to recognize there. We got to hit a commercial break here, but when we come back, we'll return to Metairie. We'll return to the greater New Orleans area, talking Saints training camp with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on RP3 and Company. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. We led off today's program talking all things Hoodats, Saints training camp. Day four was yesterday. Huge news came out of that. A big name was released. But our next guest, he called it, man. And I'm going to ask him to start giving me lottery numbers and helping me bet on the ponies because he was a psychic with his prediction that this was going to occur. He is the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He joins us every week. It's our good friend, Andrew Juge. Andrew, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the kind words, man. I don't know if I have the lottery numbers, but excited to talk some Saints for you. And we actually have the Hall of Fame game on Thursday. So preseason football starts this week, and we're getting this thing rolling.
I know, man. It's here, finally. Our long national nightmare is over. Let's start off with Cam Meredith being cut yesterday. That was to be expected. Your thoughts on that move, and your thoughts, Andrew, on the Saints doing it on day four of training camp.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty telling that, they go one day with pads. Yeah, yesterday was the first day with pads. Or, sorry, 2 days ago was the first day with pads, and they see one day of Cam Meredith in pads, and he's released. So I think that's pretty telling. Disappointing. You know, I think he's a guy that obviously we knew coming in he had a significant injury, not just your routine knee injury, but, he tore his MCL, ACL, LCL all in one go. So he had a devastating injury. Just backing up, the Saints let Willie Snead walk. He was signed to a two-year, $6.5 million offer sheet by the Ravens. The Saints declined to match it. And then they go out and they get Cam Meredith, and they sign him to a two-year, $10 million offer sheet. So that was a little bit more than what Snead got. And the Chicago Bears at the time declined to match it. Ryan Pace, who is a former assistant GM of the Saints, said, as the Bears GM, that he was advised by his medical staff that the injury to Meredith was too significant, and he didn't feel like he was going to be able to come back from that injury. So, hindsight is 2020, obviously, and it was a gamble. And Sean Payton was asked about that, and his response is blankly, he was asked, does he regret signing Meredith? And he said no. He said, I don't regret signing Drew Brees, and that's part of the deal. And so, you take a swing at some of these injured players, and if they bounce back, obviously you can get a tremendous amount of value. Cam Meredith is a guy, when he was right and when he was playing well, who was a superstar, a budding superstar in the league. And so it's just unfortunate and too bad that he was never able to kind of regain the level of play that he had. But, you talk about the margin for error at receiver, it shrinks a little bit now, and it becomes, I think, a little bit more difficult for I think what was already maybe a little bit of a weak position for the Saints. They're really going to need someone to step up. Now, the good news there, and I think the silver lining, if you're glass half full, you can look at this as a lot of young receivers have been emerging in camp. Obviously, the Emmanuel Butler hype train is on steroids at this point. And, Simi Cobbs is another young player who's been talked very well of so far in camp. So, yeah, I think the Saints felt okay releasing Cam Meredith now simply because they had a lot of young no-namers in this training camp that are ahead of him.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, let's talk about Emmanuel Butler, but also some of the other guys. They had great evaluation with Keith Kirkwood. They saw him as an undrafted rookie, signed him. He produced last year. They got Tre'Quan Smith as the now second-year third-round pick out of UCF. They have a nice young core there, not to mention Grayson, the former speedster, track and field star for LSU. Does the performance of Kirkwood and Butler during camp, is that what expedited Cam Meredith's release?
I think so, yeah. I think they felt okay with Meredith being released. I think, right now you see them looking at running backs. They brought in Theo Riddick. They were going to bring in Alfred Morris until he signed with the Cowboys. So They're looking at running back. They just signed Patrick Omeme, an offensive tackle that was a starter for the Jaguars. So, you know, I think there's been a lot of lineup shuffle. And, you know, when you have a roster like that, it's one guy in, one guy out. And so I think that's always a difficult thing. Who do we cut? Who's out of the building when you need players at different positions and you bring them in? And so when you look at who was going to be cut, I do think the emergence of Emmanuel Butler and, you know, Simi Cobbs, who's been talked about. You mentioned Seal Grayson, who's had nice speed. They like Deontay Harris and what he's shown so far. So there's a lot of guys there that are kind of interesting. And, you know, Rishard Matthews, the veteran, is another guy who's looked good. So I think they feel okay at receiver now, and that's maybe what allowed them to release Cam Meredith. I mean, the other reality is I just don't think from a physical standpoint they were seeing it happening. You know, Cam Meredith just hasn't been able to recover and be the player he used to be. That knee injury too significant. And so the Saints go ahead and they make that decision now. But, you know, it's great that these receivers are showing some promise. You mentioned Kirkwood. You mentioned Traquan Smith. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of reps and opportunities right now. Michael Thomas is not in training camp right now because he's a holdout while they go through the contract situation. Cam Meredith is now off the team. And so there's going to be all these reps with the starters, reps developing chemistry with Drew Brees that are going to be available to some of these guys. Emmanuel Butler has gotten a lot of run with the one. And so that's a tremendous opportunity, and it's kind of sink or swim for him. And we'll see. Now, it's got to translate to the games. That's the thing. I remember years ago talking to Dustin Hopkins at the time, who was battling for the kicker job for the Saints. And he told me, hey, I know they grade, and I know they pay attention to all these kicks that happen. They track everything in during training camp. But he said, you know, none of this matters like the games. And you know, he said that you're going to be evaluated most closely based on how I kick in these preseason games. And I think that applies really to every guy in the team. It's great to see it in practice, and I think they base most of their decisions and their thoughts on what they see day in, day out. But ultimately, it's got to translate to the games. And if you don't show it on game day, you're not going to make this team. So I think that's the next big step for a guy like Emmanuel Butler, is to come in a preseason game and show it on the field.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, what do you make of the battle so far at the center position? It's a three-way battle. I was kind of surprised a little bit about that. But what do you make of it so far through the first 4 days of training camp?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I can't tell you how many times I've seen open competition at a position where two guys are battling for it. I mean, certainly we've seen that many, many times. In fact, as recently as a few years ago when it was Jonathan Goodwin and Tim Lolito that were both battling for the center position all through training camp. So it's not so surprising that you'd have two players battling for it, but to have three really getting an equal shot at it, and we're talking about Cameron Tom, who's the undrafted rookie who they like a lot and who they've been developing, the high-priced free agent Nick Easton, who they just signed this offseason, and then, of course, their second-round draft pick Eric McCoy, who they traded up to get. So I think it's too early to tell. I think the vision and the hope is that Eric McCoy develops and becomes the guy. Now, I would say if there's one guy that's been struggling of that group so far, I would say it's been McCoy. There's been a couple drop snaps in camp the first 4 days. And, I know that's never on Drew Brees. So it's got to be on McCoy. And then, I think also with McCoy, you know, he just mentioned the toughest thing being his technique, you know, refining his technique and that sort of thing. So he's a work in progress, but I think the hope there is that he still is able to develop quickly enough that the Saints feel good about starting him week one. But Nick Easton's a guy that's done it, and he's a starter, so he's a guy that's played in the league and done it successfully. So if the Saints don't feel like McCoy is ready to start week one, then the job could go to Easton, and I wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion. So I think they're going to let this battle shake out, and whoever the best man will win.
We're talking with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, Saquon Hampton and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the two mid-to-late-round defensive backs that the Saints drafted just this year, they've been making some plays. They've been turning heads so far through training camp. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that's great to see. I think, these guys have special teams value to the team also. So I think they're in a great position, both of them, to make this team. You know, last year, you'll remember how many of the draft picks for the Saints didn't even make the team. And that was a combination, I think, of just the depth on the roster, a lot of veterans that are very good. And this was just a very, very tough roster to make last year. And I think that's the case again this year. I think, you know, I was just thinking about Will Clapp, you know, who made the team last year. And I think his path to the roster is infinitely more difficult this year. So, you know, that's the reality. And I think for a lot of guys, and I think that's true this year for the rookies as well, it's going to be hard to make this team unless you can really show something. But those two in particular, Saquon Hampton had some run with the ones, replacing Williams for a little bit. So you know, he's gotten a chance to see some time at free safety, and it really looks like he's kind of entrenched as the number two. So I think that's a good thing to see, that he's getting those opportunities. And I think it's important to remember that Marcus Williams will be coming up for a contract here soon. And so with all the contracts that the Saints are going to have to look at, Lattimore, Kamara, Anzalone, you know, there's going to be a lot of guys that they're going to have to re-sign, and that's going to be a big question for them. Is Marcus Williams maybe a guy that they could be okay letting go when you consider how much all these other – Onyemata's another one. All, you know, how much these guys are going to cost them to keep them. So I think it's possibly Saquon Hampton. You know, they're going to want to see what they can get out of him, and you know, it's not out of the question that he may be a starter for the Saints in the future, maybe as soon as next year if they feel like he's ready for that. So it's good to see him doing well, and I think Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is a guy that's shown some nice things too. So far these are looking like good picks. These are looking like players that can make the roster, and again, I think one thing to really pay attention to as you go into these preseason games is, are these guys on the first team kickoff? Are they on opening kickoff? Are they on the first punt team you see on the field? If that's the case, that's usually a pretty good clue that they're ascending on special teams and the team is viewing them as a core special teamer. You look at JT Gray, and he was on all the kickoff units really all of preseason last year, and that was a big hint that he was maybe going to make this 53-man roster, and he ended up doing it.
We're wrapping things up here with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, we know who the starting linebacking core is going to be. You got Anzalone, you got Double D, and you got Craig Robertson. What about the backups? Is there enough depth there, in your opinion, at the linebacking core for the Saints?
Yeah, well, A.J. Klein, I think, is one of the three starters, and, you know, Craig Robertson being a primary backup, I would say. But that feels really solid, yeah. So those three guys you mentioned and A.J. Klein, I would say, that's really the four linebackers that are clearly on this team. And, you know, I'll be honest, after that, it's really, really uncertain. And I don't know that, you know, I'm not sure that there's as much depth at linebacker this year with Manti Te'o gone. I think Manti Te'o was a nice player for the Saints that gave them kind of luxury as a backup veteran. So, you know, Vince Beagle's a guy that I know they like on special teams, and he's made this team before. And you've got the rookie Caden Ellis, who hopefully can make this team as a special teamer. You know, linebacker depth is a little short, actually, I think, after that. You know, I think, again, you've got kind of your four main guys. Davis, Anzalone, and Klein as the starters. Robertson is your main guy backing them up. And then I think if there's any injuries, the depth starts to get real thin at linebacker pretty quickly. So there's a lot of unknowns there. Certainly you hope, again, a guy like Ellis maybe can ascend and be a guy you count on down the road. That feels maybe like a position where the Saints could go looking for a veteran should something happen injury-wise.
Andrew, appreciate your time as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of this week of training camp, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday, my friend.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We got to hit our final break of today's show. When we come back, we'll update the poll question and close things out here on RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Hey, just a reminder, text Dickies, D-I-C-K-E-Y-S, to 68683 for your chance to win two $20 vouchers to Dickey's Barbecue Pit. That's a $40 value to Dickey's Barbecue Pit. Just text Dickey's to 68683 for your chance to win two $20 vouchers to Dickey's Barbecue Pit. Also, we got a new poll question up on 1037thegame.com. Make sure to go check that out and vote on it. Once again, will the creation of the LSA, that's the new private select school organization, will it help unify the LHSAA or help further tear it apart? That's our poll question today. Make sure to go vote on that at 1037thegame.com. Also, programming reminder. Houston Astros baseball is back on tonight right here on the home of Houston Astros in Acadiana, 1037 The Game. We'll have bumper-to-bumper sports from 4 to 6, and then it'll be pregame at 6 o'clock for Astros at Indians. Houston at Cleveland. First pitch will be at 6:10. Following Houston Astros baseball, we'll have Tiger Rag Radio. So just keep it live and local all day right here on 1037 The Game. So Houston Astros baseball tonight, 6:10 first pitch. So the good brother Ben Love will lead you up to that at 6 o'clock. Also coming up next, Chip Shots with Rob Spires. With just me, Rob took the day off, but we'll gear up for that. We'll talk about Brooks Koepka's big win over the weekend, winning a golf tournament that is not a major in the rare occurrence that that is. But I want to circle back in to the first thing we talked about on today's show, Cam Meredith being cut. We talked a little bit about it with our last guest, Andrew Juge, of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Look, the Saints took a flyer on this guy. They took a flyer on him. He had that great season in 2016 where he had a ton of catches, came out of nowhere, undrafted rookie, was able to develop, and had a breakout season for the Chicago Bears. And then he shredded his knee and was never the same in 2017. So much so that when the Saints made him an offer, because he was a restricted free agent, which means that the team was allowed to match any offer another team made Cam Meredith. And the Bears said, thanks, but no thanks. It was a chance. It was a gamble on could this young player who showed that he could be a dynamic wide receiver in the National Football League if he could return to form. And the Saints took a flyer, took a chance, and it didn't pay off. It just didn't pay off. He only appeared in a handful of games last season, only made a handful of catches, was not an impact player, and they needed another guy to step up to be the number two wide receiver for this team. They got one of the top five wide receivers in the league in Michael Thomas. Ted Ginn Jr. is still a serviceable guy, mainly in the slot. But they need someone else to step up to be that number two, to be that number three, number four wide receiver. And it's going to be between Tre'Quan Smith, who they took in the third round last year out of UCF, the undrafted rookie out of Temple, Keith Kirkwood, and then it was Cam Meredith. And Cam Meredith fell by the wayside due to being injured once again, but also due to a lack of production when the other guys were stepping up and making plays, even though they were inconsistent as rookies, and particularly Smith and Kirkwood. So now those guys have a season under their belt, and now you have other players emerging as well, including another undrafted rookie free agent in Emmanuel Butler this year out of Northern Arizona. So you got those guys fighting, and you got Rishard Matthews, a veteran of the NFL, in the mix. They didn't need Cam Meredith. So the Cam Meredith experiment, however you want to view it as, was a failure. But now the Saints can move on and strengthen that wide receiver core with guys who can stay healthy, be on the field, and make plays. I think they have that in the group of guys they have left there on the roster fighting it out. So who's going to become the number three, number four wide receivers on this roster for the Saints this season, and catching all those passes and all those touchdowns from number nine, Drew Brees. That's going to do it for today's show. I want to thank our guests, George Faust from KLFY, Robin Fanbro from The Advocate, and Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It's been a tremendous show. Y'all have a safe day out there. Be careful, And we'll talk to you tomorrow, Acadiana. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.